With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we are talking about the Seasons in Quincy, Four Portraits of John Berger. This is a four-part documentary about the academic, writer, playwright, artist John Berger, conducted of four different films, all linked together by Tilda Swinton and Colin McCabe. And joining me to talk about this are Jenna Hobbs.
Hiya.
And Helen Seymour.
Hello.
Now, John Berger may be a name that you're familiar with for his work Ways of Seeing, which for me and for Helen were introduced to in academia in the School of Arts. And so for our podcast pitch to begin this week, I wanted to ask you guys to pitch me a documentary about a figure from your academia that maybe we didn't know about, or other people, I should say, wouldn't know about, or you may be familiar with, you know the name, just as a lot of people may be familiar with Berger's name, and this film kind of brings the person to the screen, if you will. Helen?
Right, so I did History of Art, so Tilda's totally taken who I would do.
Yeah.
John.
Yeah.
She's taking that one. So I probably do Roland Barthes because I did a photography module and specifically his text Camera Lucida, which is such a beautiful text. I didn't know anything about him and I didn't really know anything about photography before I did the module. But even just as a piece of writing and about the idea of photography and whether there's kind of any soul or essence that you can really capture in a photograph, it's amazing. And he did a lot of the writing just alone, sort of in a period of like grief and melancholy. And there's a picture at the beginning of these really blue, like sea blue curtains that kind of give a sense of the atmosphere that he was writing in. So I'd love to see a documentary about him in that state and him doing that, and maybe look at him during different times in his life if we did like four pictures and then ending with this kind of greeny blue hue curtain. I think it'd be great.
And I think a lot of people will think of a different text when we think of Barthes as well. And this will be a completely different angle and a completely different art form, actually.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't even necessarily associate photography with him either.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But honestly, you should read it. It's really short. Yeah. Everyone read it. I always say it because it's so short and so magical. And yeah, I loved it.
Excellent. Jen?
Well, I just changed my mind. I studied theatre, and as such, I suppose the kind of academics that I think of in that way are performance makers, not necessarily people who write textbooks in the kind of way Helen has. So for a while, I thought I was going to pitch for Marina Abramović, who's a really great performance artist who has such an interesting way of expressing herself, almost her essay-like performances. But then I just remembered she's made her own documentary. So she's pipped me to it. So I think, actually, I'd quite like to see a documentary about Antonin Artaud.
Right. Well, I don't know that a name at all.
Okay. Well, he was a sort of French theatrical philosopher who was quite a young man. Oh, and very attractive as a young man. There were a few pictures of him in the early 20th century. And he basically kind of revolutionised the way he thought that theatre could be. And he had all these off-the-wall ideas. It was like about theatre of destruction, and he wrote a piece of theatre that was never able to be performed because all of the ideas in it were so, I guess, not of this world and not capable upon stage. But this was in the early 20th century. I'm thinking a documentary about Arto and about people actually trying with the technical capabilities we have now to make his play 100 years later.
Sounds a bit like there's elements of Charlie Kaufman in there as well, like particularly Synecdoche, New York, into like staging a play that just is never ending in its scope and capability. Wow. That sounds pretty cool. Well, I'm going to go in my first year of university. I was studying film, but I could take a wild module in philosophy. And so we were looking at a few different things. And one of the outside readings that I did was The Long Way by Bernard Matissier. And this has come up recently because there's a film coming out later this year called The Mercy, which has got Colin Firth in. And it's about Donald Crowhurst, who was this sailor who took part in this round the world race, and he was not really a good sailor, and everyone else is actually competing and can properly sail a boat.
Is it like Cool Runnings?
It's exactly like Cool Runnings, except if Cool Runnings was really bleak and depressing and a descent into the heart of darkness.
It is.
Donald Crowhurst goes a bit awry at sea, and it's a really brilliant film. Well, there is a documentary called Deep Water about it, which is brilliant. And this is going to be a kind of traditional narrative adaptation. But one of the other sailors is this chap called Bernard Matissier. And he was competing in the race, and he just loved sailing and being out on the boat. And it wasn't really about the race for him. And he was going through, and he was winning, and he kind of got to... he had gone around the whole world, and there was a kind of a... the southern Spain waiting to come up to the UK to win it, and he was just like, oh no, nah, I like being on the boat too much. And he just turned around and kept and went around again, because that was what he lived for. And so I've got so he was the kind of guy that could be, well, sail a boat for 18 months without stopping and be completely fine with that, and was a survivalist in that sense, but also a philosopher. And so there's a lovely quote from him where he says, I am a citizen of the most beautiful nation on earth, a nation whose laws are harsh yet simple, a nation that never cheats, which is immense and without borders, where life is lived in the present. In this limitless nation, this nation of wind, light and peace, there is no other ruler besides the sea.
Oh, that's very lovely.
Yeah. And so his book, The Long Way, is full of, like, you'll get a paragraph of that, but then to earn that paragraph, you've got to deal with a chapter about knots and tides. And it's like, I'll get through this, and then I can get to more lovely poetic bits about the sea. So I was going to split this into two parts, or get two directors, and have Michael Dudok DeWitt, who did the animation The Red Turtle, which has just come out, which is beautiful animation for the sea, and really philosophical without being overtly aggressive in its kind of intelligence. And I'd love to see some animation sequences of Matissier at sea, but then Kevin MacDonald, who did Touching the Void.
Great.
Really intense survivalist documentary there to handle the kind of sailing sequences as well. And that would be my pitch.
Jake Williams, I think.
Oh, I know. Shit. Just research. Having a better idea than the rest of us. Wins every time.
What he's done there, generous. He's brought along a quote.
Yeah, sorry. Well, Matissier's quote, really. I think he's won the points there. But interesting, I looked up the cast list for this new film, and his person has not been cast. So I was trying to figure out who you could possibly have to cast him.
Well, you've still got time to make your pitch.
Yeah, I could go for it. I've definitely got the look of a guy that could... If there's someone that looks like they could handle 18 months at sea...
Jake Cunningham.
Yeah, that's me. Right, thank you, guys. thank you so much.
Is that your first win, Jake?
I think I've won one before. But it's always odd when you're hosting. It feels like you shouldn't really... But, you know, I'll let it slide this time. All right. So let's move on to the Seasons on Quansey, Four Portraits of John Berger. This is a bit of an odd one because we've got to kind of restructure how we would normally talk about our film, because normally we have one film to talk about, and in a way we have four different films to talk about now. So the first one is Ways of Listening, and this is directed by Colin McCabe, and this is more about Tilda Swinton and John Burgess' friendship and what they have in common, and just their meeting and talking, and it is listening, really, isn't it? It doesn't feel like it's any larger than that.
Yeah, this was my absolute favourite of the four. I'm fascinated always by human relationships and interesting relationships that you don't normally see. Like, they point out there are two people who are 34 years apart in age, but born on the same day and feel like they have this special relationship because of that. And throughout all of their discussions, you see how close they are, but also that there isn't necessarily, or why is there a bigger reason that they're so connected to one another? It's quite interesting to observe.
I think what's really good is that it's really showing a relationship, like you said, that we don't normally see. And I've said for a long, long time that there's not enough things about friendship, just friendship, like platonic friendship. And this does this so beautifully and so well. But in a way, and I kind of wanted to talk about this a little bit, is that it does it in a way where I was wondering, it almost seemed inaccessible to me. And that makes it sound like it's distant, and it's. I didn't find it distant. Okay, I found it really, like, warm to, like, listen to, and I loved watching it. But there was a distance because I was wondering whether I would be able to be in a relationship like that. And I found it difficult to conceive how I could be, because there, like you said, there didn't seem to be anything really that you could pin down of, like, why they got on or anything. And some of, apart from this shared connection that was really more about listening than anything that you could see. And I was kind of wondering how I would fit into a relationship like that. And it was something that I really wanted, because it's so nice to see, but it seemed unattainable to me. And I found that an interesting thing that they've managed. I felt like that, and yet I found it warm.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I do see what you mean there, but what I really like about this little film, and the fact that it's placed as the first film, is that a lot of people, myself included, and maybe yourself as well, Helen, see Berger as an academic, as a writer, as intelligent person who is separate, and that distance that you said is there, and this immediately takes that away and stops him from being the writer of that book and the creator of that television show and the writer of that script, and instantly makes him a person. And the same can be said for Tilda Swinton, because we see Tilda Swinton in films and we see her on a catwalk. Again, we have a distance, and she's statuesque and she's piercing, and you think of her as not being able to have, like, this kind of lovely, warm relationship. And it's diffused almost instantly, because there's a moment where she looks into the camera and smiles because she's caught off guard by laughing at something that he said. And it's just from that moment, we're in there and we're in the room and we're watching them cook, and it's just really wonderful.
It's so intimate, and it's so not glamorous in that way that you were saying, as you see someone as an academic or as a star, that you can't imagine them being in a simple home, in like a place where they would chop apples together or just talk. You can't, and I think it humanises them both instantly in a really beautiful way.
With what you just said, this is why I find it really interesting, because I agree that I instantly felt really warm towards them and I felt like I was part of it. But I think it's the way that they talk. I think I was sitting there thinking, I haven't got an interesting story about how my dad peeled apples. Like, there's something about the way that people interact, and that it is in this academic way, that I find myself feeling like I don't know if I would be able to contribute to this conversation, even though I can't quite put my hand on what I feel that I'm lacking, if you know what I mean. And I really find it interesting in watching those, and especially there's another conversational piece in the third one that I found that a lot more. And lately I've been so interested in like how we present conversation and also home and feelings of nostalgia and things like that. I've said before, like, I find in some things there's like a, I put it in quote marks, like a John Lewis-ification of certain scenes in certain films. Oh, it's the one about the monster.
A Monster Calls,
right? And that's about sickness, and so it's something that I'm really interested in and I'm researching. But, like, I guess because it's a children's film, they always put, like, a colourful blanket around it, and the scene has to look really beautiful and like a John Lewis advert. And I felt a tiny bit when I was watching this, like, there's something about someone sitting in a beautiful warm lamplight and peeling apples that... As it feels warm and you feel part of it, and the way they're talking, there's some distance there because it's not nostalgia to me.
Yeah.
Like, and I think to feel really connected with that scene, it has to come with a feeling of nostalgia. And I didn't have that because lots of people don't, like, quite a lot of people don't have that environment that they think, oh, that was like my childhood, or that's like home. And this isn't a criticism of the film at all. This is my own personal way that I watched it. I'd be so interested to hear like so many other people's reactions to it.
For me, I can totally see that environment.
Yeah.
Like, and be within it.
Yeah.
But as even if you can't see that, you're still, it is, as the title says, it's a portrait of a person.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what this gives us that insight into. It's not just the portrait of a person, it's a portrait of a place and a home.
Oh, totally.
And being able to, and I think I was caught by the, just the cinematography in this sequence is original in a way for being quite plain in that the shot of Tilda Swinton peeling the apples is like shot from above looking down, and then the reverse shot of Berger is just a normal kind of over the shoulder plain close up, but that's just to fit in the apples and her peeling it, so it does, you don't get this broken editing of close up of the apple, close up to her talking, close up to wide, wide, close up to him.
Yeah,
it feels very unbroken, and I know there's trickery in the edits, and I know it's been cleaned up afterwards, but it feels like such an organic conversation just because there are these two shots, and you see her peeling and talking, and there's no way it could have really been broken up.
Definitely.
It does feel almost like home video in some ways, I think. Especially, I don't know if there is a quality in the actual way it was filmed that gives it that almost like 90s
I think
tape.
It is. Yeah. It is low budget. Like they've gone out there with not a lot of gear. And actually, I think there's a shot in this one where they're making the food and it's fairly high quality. And then there's a bit, I think, where the crew actually come and eat.
Mm.
And one of the crew has just put maybe his phone down to record that moment because he can't man a camera. And so it goes even lower quality for a bit. And it's got this nice reflexivity as well, which again, climbs into that portrait of John, that he is just completely happy to let everyone in here and do this. It's not this uber intense artistic production of what his life is. He's just like, come round, come and make me some pudding. That's fine. Let's sit around and let's eat and let's talk.
Yeah, there's no pretense to it, which is great.
And I think like that's for me why I got the most out of this sequence and the fourth one. I say sequence; they should be films.
We should say as well they've each got their own credits, so it's not even something like Moonlight where it's divided into three parts or something like that. They are really.
Yeah, and stylistically, I think there's similarities between this and the last one. But yeah, they have their own identity as well. But I think that first one really focuses on Swinton and Berger and their relationship and their history and how they came to be who they are.
Yeah.
And
it was so interesting the way they were speaking about their fathers and that kind of... shared feeling they both had of not being spoken to as children and how that's kind of reflected in their own lives, but also how they found each other and how they find that as a connection between it, and the idea of war and soldiers and and things. I absolutely loved when he was talking about twin souls and about, I think that's because I'm a big old romantic, but they were talking about how they would have known each other in another life and set their appointment for the 5th of November to meet each other again, but she was just a bit late.
Yeah, and the fact that they both were told by their parents that on bonfire night, their birthday, that the fireworks were for them. Mm. And despite that age gap, both of their parents told them the same thing.
Mm.
Which is
very
really nice.
Lovely.
There's a particular moment in this one where John says something which then the way that he says it occurs in all of the films, I think, in his ability to just create the most wonderful turns of phrase instantly.
Oh yeah.
Like just the most fierce intelligence and artistry of language. Because he's talking about his understanding his father's experience of war, and this was the First World War. And he says something along the lines of, he understood the continent of his dad's work, but he just couldn't see the borders or the roads. And just coming up with that out of thin air, it's just phenomenal. And then you kind of get a bit of understanding of how everyone fell in love with this guy. Like, if he can just talk like that. And this sequence is Ways of Listening. And when it finished, I thought, oh, no, that's a shame. I thought, like, this could have been 90 minutes of that.
I could have had 90 minutes of just them making that crumble, honestly.
So, shouldn't miss the credits on there. That was Ways of Listening. That's Colin McCabe. And that was written by Tilda Swinton as well. So the next up, the second sequence is Spring by Christopher Roth, which is by far and away the most experimental of them. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, and it's quite a big change after you see John so close up and so at home and intimate. And then you don't really see him. Is he even in that one?
I don't think he's in it.
You don't really see him at all. And it's, I think something you mentioned beforehand is that this is the one that focuses mainly on his work rather than his personality, which I couldn't quite work out how to say, but you told that to me earlier and now I'm going to say it.
Yeah, it's almost like it's trying, I think it does, and it would be to discredit the director for saying it doesn't. It's creating a screen adaptation of his ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Directly in this instance about animals.
Mm-hmm.
So the first film, Ways of Listening, was Winter. That's set in the week before Christmas. This is Spring. And so as it's spring, it takes animals as its subject.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And it looks at what the writing that John made on animals, which I had no idea was quite a substantial amount of his work. And he wrote a lot about that. And which I don't think any of us knew.
No, not at all. No idea.
And so it takes passages that he had written and looks at them with context of footage that they shot in Concy of the cows and the pigs there, along with archive footage as well from features that John did on TV shows and films that he made himself. Yeah, I think this is... It's the most aggressive of the four. And perhaps the least accessible, but it makes you, I don't know, it feels like this should be the one we should be being made to think about.
Would yeah. Well, there's a bit where it describes a pig that really got me, generally.
Mm. Yeah, I felt really upset during the pig section. Just like at this, you're talking about when he kind of speaks from the perspective of the pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, I found it very upsetting, almost vegetarian.
No, but I genuinely have been struggling a long time whether I should be vegetarian or vegan. And sometimes I think, oh, what if it's like in Buddhism where you get reborn as something, and then everyone that eats meat gets reborn as an animal. And this isn't why I think that sounds like, oh, I should be vegetarian because, God, I don't want to be an animal. Like, I don't want to be killed like they are. That's horrible. Like, only because it would affect me. Like, genuinely, I just thought about it in that way. So that way that he describes it as the pig is like a human man being wrestled to the ground and being mugged. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what I've been thinking. Yeah. Like, oh, no. And it has this scene of a pig and the pig's eye.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, that was so powerful.
Just the, like, real, like, study and focus on the pig in the way that you never think before. As I was watching it, I was like, aren't pigs' noses beautiful and their mouths and the way that they, like, work
oh,
like that?
Oh, that's amazing. Because I thought, I don't like pigs' noses. I find them weird.
It was one of those things where I was like, it's so clever that's the way it's made.
And there was some really...
Jake was eating a bacon sandwich at the time.
It was the nose kind of freaked me out a bit. The eyes, they're really expressive eyes of all of the animals, and I think it was a conscious decision to focus in on the eyes there. But I don't, it's not preaching anything.
No,
that's the
not
thing.
At all. No.
No, it doesn't tell you shouldn't be eating pig or you shouldn't be eating meat. It kind of just, you know, gives you the perspective of this animal as it's going on. Or it's not the pig's perspective, is it? It's the person who's taking the pig out. His sort of like, but he kind of embodies his thoughts and his feelings.
Yeah, yeah,
and yeah, well, you know, it's a testament to it because I actually believed it was the pig's perspective for a little while there. Just sort of really sad and like really affected me quite deeply.
Well, you saying he has the most amazing turns of phrases, like he ends that section with, its death was like the draining of a basin.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's incredible though.
Yeah.
Like as a writer, if you're looking for like a simple image that's not overcomplicated, that wants to, you know, get across the emotion you're trying to convey, you can't do better than that.
Mm.
And I was wrong, like I said, he wasn't in this one, but then of course there are footage sort of archived of him. But I guess the reason I was sort of remembering that he's not in there is the John we see with the apples is not in there.
Yeah.
Which I found a really interesting
and
contrast.
They are in Consi as well, so they could have filmed him.
Yeah, but they talk about him being bereaved, and I wasn't sure if that was like a true kind of thing, or that was how they were setting up the narrative. Yeah. Like, I think he was bereaved at that time, but whether...
Yeah, because we do see Beverly, his wife, in the first film, who is then, a noticeable absentee from the others, particularly in the last one. So that's Spring by Christopher Roth, which is the second film. And the third is A Song for Politics, which is by Bartek Zjados and Colin McCabe again. And I think this feels the most high profile in a way. Like the most staged. Like it feels like...
This one puts him in the context of our world a bit more, or the world he's come from. Because, you know, when you're in Consi, it's very removed. And the second one, it's all about the animals. It's really different. It's not the world that we live in. And no, it's not London. It's not England. And I think this one makes it him more real as the man that people thought he was.
Yes, yes. And this is this puts John, along with four other people, basically in a round table. And there doesn't seem to be any set questions. It seems like they're ready to just tackle big ideas. I think everyone wants to do that. And John is there in a shirt and a gilet, and everyone else is in a suit. And he's just like, yeah, this is casual. I'll just go and talk about the biggest debates around the world. But that's fine. That's just every day, isn't it? And the other people must be so nervous and ready for this. And it makes some really... that there are big ideas at play here, but those are not the moments where this one, for me, shines. And I think you'd probably agree, Helen.
Yeah, so this I found the most uncomfortable to watch because I hate things like that. And I sort of had this real thing against sort of academics who think that just the sound of their own voices is sort of enough to fill a programme or something. And it was set up like that. And I also felt that there was not enough listening being done, particularly by the men when a woman was speaking. Yep. And that is just true. You can watch it back. Like, she gets interrupted a lot, which was annoying me. But it's just, I think it's that thing a little bit what I was talking about in the beginning, is that it doesn't feel like I don't have the words that they have. I don't think about my ideas in that way. I'm certainly not as clever as them, and that's fine. But the way that I express my thoughts doesn't suit a round table.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't feel comfortable there.
Feel comfortable sitting around a desk with, like, maybe three people sharing an opinion, having a little chat.
Like, to be honest, it doesn't come. It's not like a real natural thing. So when I watch it, I'm not like, and you're like, I know you. Like, if it was with strangers, I sort of say too much. Like, I'm aware of that within myself. So watching it, I got a bit annoyed and a bit sort of grumpy when they were just banging on about, quite a lot of them were banging on. I'm banging on now, but quite a lot of them were banging on, weren't they?
I think he's an American chap, a younger American chap with glasses and black hair, who I think was relishing this moment a bit too much. And when we've been to lectures and things, like, there is always this kind of guy.
Yeah, I think that's what it was reminding me of. Yeah.
He's the kind of guy that after if there's a screening of a film, he's the kind of guy that would put his hand up afterwards and say something like, I think I have more of a statement than a question.
You've absolutely nailed it.
there's a lot of people repeating the last word of someone else's sentence to make it sound like they knew what they were talking
about. Oldest trick in the book. Yeah.
But there is a great bit where John kind of shows his intelligence over all of them in one fell swoop. And what it's about hell, is
right?
It?
So I think they're talking about kind of left wing and right wing politics, and then John sort of goes off on one about, and he says, "But I have a question. Is it not the ones in hell where solidarity is most needed between them?" I'm paraphrasing, it's something like that. So he's basically saying, like, in hell when everything's bad, that's when you need solidarity, that you get that feeling from hell, but from heaven you don't really have those. And then it's just silent. And a lot of and then there's a great bit where someone else is like, I'm grasping. Grasping. And I love those breaks, and John's sort of laughing as well.
It's just wonderful to see a man who's just, like, fiercely clever, but at no point makes anyone else feel bad or feel like they're stupid.
He's the one that doesn't do that. I feel like some of the others do.
Definitely.
But it sort of shines a light on his gentle soul even more. Yeah.
That this one definitely feels like the most present, the most rooted in now as well. And I think it's well worth watching, particularly with the amount of politics that we've been talking about at the moment.
It was very interesting to draw parallels to.
Yep. Right, so we will move on to the last one, which is Harvest. And this is directed by Tilda Swinton, who returns from the first one. And this is definitely most comparable to the first one. We return to Concy with Tilda going to John's house, but this time she has brought her children with her as well.
So this one is like the second part of the first one, which is why I really, really loved it. And there's two bits. There's one bit with a box, a present, and they wrap it with a green ribbon. And when they're wrapping it, I thought, oh, look at that green. And then when they give it to John, John's like, oh, look at that green. Like, in many ways, me and John have a connection. But also he talks about the raspberries. with Tilda's children, and how his wife Beverly would love to watch them watching the eating them, and sort of ask them to find a pit to eat them, but in front of a picture of her, which is so beautiful. And he chokes up a little bit when he's talking about it, and that sort of broke away any feelings of like, oh, I wouldn't fit in on this, because I'm like, oh, you're a vulnerable man, I can get on board with that. Like, I feel vulnerable too.
I think that bit, and the bit in the first one about the dates of their birthday, breaks character for kind of what we think of with modern philosophers as there's a bit of spiritualism there, is really surprising. And the fact that they seem to, I think, have some small belief that they are linked in some celestial way.
Yeah, I think they really do.
And that he does believe that. Like, it would be really great if they did eat those raspberries in front of a picture of his wife.
There's a really lovely thing from the first one where they talk about photographs being like transportive, so that you can be in different places and things like that, which I found mirrored in that with the photograph of Beverly.
Yeah, so John has a dream where he says, did you come by train or by photograph? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Stuff like, oh, come on, John.
Stop it.
Come on, it's too much, too beautiful.
Yeah. I think this one kind of gets into the legacy and the next generations a lot, because we meet John's son, and he talks about the farm and the barn house and the way that they would feed the cows. And it got me thinking about a bit that from the second one, Spring, where they read from one of John's texts about animals, and he talks about the shepherd, and he says that a shepherd... because a shepherd brings life, will bring a cow or whatever, a goat, into the world and then deliver its children and deliver that's children. And in that time, the shepherd will have his own children and there will be an overlap, and the shepherd's son will then deliver the goat's child, and the flock will just keep regenerating and regenerating whilst the shepherd won't, obviously. And I think that's kind of reflected in this, that we see John's ideas and John's lifestyle continuing with him and refracting into Tilda's children's as well, that that they're blossoming into a relationship with him and with her son, or with his son, sorry, that is reflective of the relationship that Tilda and John had as well.
100%. Yeah, it is about that legacy. You pretty much nailed it there. That is that, and that is what is so beautiful about that. And also in the first one, she actually talks about continuing on children, continuing on your own story through your children, and this last one shows how they do that.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful. And there's a lovely treat just at the very end after the credits. I don't want to say it's like one of the best scenes, but because it's after the credits and it feels like just a little sweet at the end.
But it's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's really lovely.
It's just such a lovely motorbike moment where John offers Tilda's daughter motorbike lessons and she's so overwhelmed. And then he's like, actually, we've got 5 minutes now. Do you want to jump on? And then he's just like, great, helmet. He just does it. And Tilda looks to the camera and she's like, ah! Yeah,
and she's so worried as well, but she's like, because there's a camera there and her daughter's excited and she doesn't want to look like she's not excited for her, but you can see it in her eyes. It's like, oh, don't crash, John, be safe. But I think, and you can see in that her love for him as well, that he is he's the type of man that would actually just look down at his watch and go, hang on, we've got 5 minutes, let's go on the motorbike now. it's a really lovely way to end the film as well, without too much gravitas. Again, going back to that idea of stripping down the distance between us and these big ideas, that it shortens that and makes these people feel like people again.
He feels so alive as well within that scene, with how excited he is to take off on the motorbike. And, you know, sadly, he has passed away now, and it's nice that it wasn't ended on a sad note because of that. It's felt so alive, so energetic in that moment, and that's how his sort of legacy lives on.
Yeah, the way he drives off is such a perfect way to say goodbye to him, really.
Absolutely.
And so we've been talking a lot about our relationships with academia and, of course, John himself. And so I took the opportunity to, if people don't know, we record this at the University of Kent. And so I emailed the School of Arts here to see if they would have anyone that would be able to talk to us about John Berger. Sadly, we won't be able to get anyone into interview, but they did give us an email address for Lucy Cash of the School of Arts, who is a big Berger fan, who we gave a copy of the film to, and I've just got a few thoughts to read out from her. So she says, bereft as I felt at the death of John Berger at the beginning of this year, it was a very tender pleasure to watch this film. Here are my thoughts. This is a rich, complex film essay, and there are many beautiful moments within its frames. If you listen carefully, you can get a feel for the extent of John Berger amidst its layered terrain. As cited in the third film, A Song for Politics, John Berger had the extraordinary ability to heed the difficult realities of the present political context and the accompanying need for collaboration and solidarity, whilst extending a precise attention to the present moment, to the extraordinary ordinariness of being alive. The combination of these qualities is rare and complex, and perhaps the most fitting way to understand the power of this is to spend time in his presence. The Seasons in Concy offers this to us, for which I, for one, am very grateful, and is most successfully so when Berger is in dialogue with long-term friend and collaborator Tilda Swinton, or her children, or fellow theorist and writer Colin McCabe. It is and has always been apparent both in his writing and his presence in this film that Berger was free of the constraints of hierarchy, itself a radical position especially in today's current climate. Swinton and McCabe, established as they are in their own field, can meet Berger as an equal, in a way that inevitably the young filmmakers in, for instance, the second section, Spring, are unable to. It's possible to discern underneath the surface of this film that that lack of hierarchy was perhaps itself a challenge for them, and what a daunting task to attempt, a response to his intellectual breadth and depth and his extraordinary attention. Accordingly, my only critical quibble in this brilliantly conceived and generous film is that in attempting to creatively represent his radical nature, Spring employs well-intended but slightly self-conscious performative filmmaking strategies which feel like a distraction, a need to contribute rather than a more profound filmic response. Perhaps inevitably the most simple, but never simplistic, moments in this film are the most profound. Moments of interaction, of dialogue, or just the sense of a place, an object, or a way of being, speak with their own intensity and mean that this essay film has much to offer that is unique to moving image. Watching the film brought alive a life lived in such a way that the present is always connected to the past and the future, but never to its detriment. I could have happily eavesdropped for longer on conversations that took place. To say this another way means that I didn't want the film to end and immediately had to watch parts of it again, scribbling down notes as I watched. If the word inspiring is sometimes undermined by its too frequent usage, this film properly reinstates storytelling as an act of generosity. The uncertainty to do with hope that has nothing to do with optimism, which all truly inspiring works of art engender. Wow, really lovely.
Yeah, that's so great.
So thank you, Lucy, so much for sending that and giving you time to give us your thoughts there on this film. So that is The Seasons in Concy, Four Portraits of John Berger, and that is in Curzon Cinemas today and also on Curzon Home Cinema to watch instantly. And that's not the only thing that we want to recommend on Curzon Home Cinema this week. Also out is
20th Century Women. It's my favourite film I've seen so far this year. It's absolutely incredible. Set in the 70s, got Annette Bening in it, Greta Gerwig, Elle Fanning, among many other great actors and great performances. It's just a great story that I think anyone will get a lot out of watching.
Yep, and if you do get the chance to watch it, then make sure you go back and listen to our podcast with Mike Mills, the director.
Yes.
Moonlight is on Curzon Home Cinema. I'm sure you have heard of it, but if you missed it at the cinema, now is your chance to catch up.
This is the musical, yeah?
Yeah, with Ryan Gosling. Yeah. it's amazing film. Don't think, oh, that's got loads of hype, it's probably not very good. It is really, 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 really very good. Also, one quick thing about John Berger that I just want to quickly, if you've never even heard of him, don't feel like you can't see this film, like you can get so much out of this film.
Oh yeah,
like I should have said that in the in the intro. Oh, yeah. like you don't need to know anything about him. You can just jump straight into this and understand the sense of a person and how intelligent he is.
Yes, and Ways of Seeing, his most famous text, which I didn't realise had a TV series to go with it, called Ways of Seeing. And the whole thing is on YouTube. So go out there and find that as well. There's nothing to get in the way.
Yeah.
Seek it out. So yeah, Seasons in Concy, 4 Portraits of John Berger. Go and find it. Until next time, we must say thank you to CSR for letting us use their studio. We will see you next week. It's goodbye from Jenna.
Bye.
It's goodbye from Helen.
Au revoir.
And it's goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.